91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today we welcome back local documentarian Mark Moorman. He'll bring us the details about his upcoming film, The Record Man, about how Henry Stone exported the music of Miami to the world. Film critic Dan Hudak previews the Southern Circuit Film Tour and their feature film, The New Black. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and our Palm Beach Arts Calendar features Marilyn Bauer. Please stay with us to catch the arts conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News. And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, film critic Dan Hudak previews the Southern Circuit Film Tour and its feature film, The New Black, coming to Baca in Pompano Beach. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and our Palm Beach County Arts Calendar features Marilyn Bauer. Award-winning Florida-based filmmaker Mark Moorman has produced a wide body of work that includes the Grammy-nominated Tom Dowd and the Language of Music, about the legendary music producer, Blindsided, featured on HBO, and For Once in My Life, winner of the South by Southwest and Nashville Film Festival Audience Awards, and an International Documentary Association Award for Best Music Documentary. His work with musical talent has included studio shoots with Aerosmith, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Andrea Bocelli, and Michael Jackson, and interviews with Ray Charles, Eric Clapton, Les Paul, and renowned record producers Ahmet Erdogan and Phil Ramone. His live performance shoots have included the Bee Gees, Shakira, and Amy Winehouse's premier U.S. performance at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. His latest documentary is called The Record Man, about the legendary South Florida music distributor and producer Henry Stone, who together with his incredible talent crew went on to launch the disco era and export Miami music to the world. Best known as co-owner and president of TK Records, Stone supposedly set up over 100 different record labels and was responsible for over 100 million record sales. The Record Man documentary is scheduled for release in March of 2015. Here's Henry Stone in a clip from the forthcoming film, The Record Man.
I left California, and I had just got to Miami. I had to go down to the courthouse, and as I was walking up the courthouse steps, I heard somebody screaming my name, Henry Stone, Henry Stone. And I turned around and looked, and this was a gentleman from California that I knew very well. He said, Henry, I was looking all over for you, man. And we shipped about 10,078 by train to Miami. Some jukebox operators ordered it, and they never picked it up. Do you think you could try to sell them? I said, great, that sounds like a great idea. 5,000 of the records was Open the Door Richard. It was a huge hit. And I was in the distributing business in 1948. So I didn't end up going to work with my friend in the nightclubs. Instead, I ended up starting my Seminole Record Distribution Company here in Florida. At that time here in Florida, there were no record stores, but all the records I sold were the jukebox operators.
These jukebox operators would have these juke joints, basically black whorehouses. These race records were in these whorehouses, and they would make a fortune. When I would walk in with new black record hit, Henry Stone was there. Wow. Because that meant a lot of money to them, generated a lot of quarters.
And here in Miami, I became known as the Record Man.
Henry Stone, from a clip from the forthcoming film, The Record Man, and the producer and director and editor, and Mark Moorman joins us here. on South Florida Arts Beat, and you're wearing so many hats, I lose track. Mark, how did this project start?
Okay, Ed. Well, thanks for having me once again. Always a pleasure to get to hang out with you, man. It started, I got a call from a guy named Mitchell Egber. He and his wife, Debbie, they wanted to make a music doc. And I gave him some advice about another project they had in mind. And that project didn't end up happening. But I had lunch with them one day, and they mentioned that they were going to go meet up with Henry Stone later in the day and wanted to know if I wanted to tag along. So I knew Henry and his history and had actually interviewed him in the past. And so I tagged along when we went and met Henry and his wife Inez and his son Joe. And right away they let me know how big of fans they were of the Tom Dowd film that I had made. And so then we all sat down and discussed making a film about Henry's life and Henry's career down here in South Florida. And what I was struck by was just the fact that, I mean, this guy was in the Miami music business before there was a music business in Miami. Mm-hmm. He basically came here and set up a distribution shop and distributed for the majors, and then would always keep, as he said, a little studio in his back pocket. Mm-hmm. And in one of those little studios on Flagler Street in 1950, he recorded a young Ray Charles, mm-hmm, before anybody knew who Ray Charles was. And eventually went, had a business deal with a guy named Sid Nathan of King Records out of Cincinnati. And that's where he met James Brown and became lifelong friends and associate with James. And really Miami music history through this one man.
Extraordinary. And I had no idea that he helped James launch his national career because Henry had an association with King Records. Right.
Correct. Actually, I went up to Cincinnati recently because I needed to get some images for the film, and the studios were still there.
Wow.
The building was still there. The insides of it were pretty much ruined, but mm-hmm, I got exterior shots and got a lot of images and images of Henry back in the day, and pretty extraordinary. So he really learned a lot of the business, mm-hmm, of publishing and rights and you know, basically, you know, Henry was a guy, he came from the streets of New York City, man.
Mm-hmm. And born in the Bronx.
Yeah, and grew up in the Depression. And he was, as he would say, he was stealing fruit from fruit stands just to stay alive, and ended up getting sent to an orphanage in upstate New York. And that's where he learned music. He learned how to play a trumpet up there and got him loving music at an early age, and ended up playing with an integrated army band in World War II, mm-hmm, and played with some great, great players. And after that, you know, he went to L.A. He had some family out there. And, you know, there were a lot of great players, and he realized it was going to be hard for him to make a living as a musician. So he got into the business end of the music business out in Los Angeles and eventually came to Miami to pursue another opportunity here, and kind of fell into, as you heard in that clip there, fell into the music business here in Miami and set up shop here.
He was in the right place at the right time for that as well. So much had been going on in Miami. I mean, you had the Rat Pack over at the Fountain Blue and great music up and down Miami Beach with tons of jazz clubs and a tourist mecca. But music always prominent, and right place, right time for Henry Stone. Tell me about the musician pool, the talent pool that he had to deal with. Wow, what a great group of people. These people were on the par of Motown Records, mm-hmm, musicians, as well as Sun Records musicians, mm-hmm, and...
Well, you know, I'll tell you, there was a good film made down here last year, Deep City Records, mm-hmm, some local guys made, and it told that story of local musicians trying to make it here, and they would put records out, but the records really wouldn't go anywhere, just not outside of the 305 area code. And what Henry could do is that he had connections with national distributors, mm-hmm, so all the big record companies would send their records. It wasn't sending stuff over the internet or downloading from the internet. It was physical records. They'd ship on trains and bring them in, and he'd had a warehouse in Hialeah, and would ship these out to the record stores that started to spring up in the 1950s. And, you know, so you had guys like Willie Clark and Clarence Reed at Deep City, and they were really looking to take their stuff to the national level, and that's what Henry was able to offer them. And so he set up shop over in Hialeah in a warehouse, and he had a little upstairs studio, and that little upstairs studio ended up being the birthplace of what became TK Records and became the number one independent record company in the entire world.
Oh, selling over 100 million records throughout the longevity of TK and its various subsidiary labels. Just amazing. Tell me about his custodian who was cleaning up, sweeping the floors.
Okay, well, there was a guy by the name of Harry Wayne Casey, born and raised in Hialeah, Florida. And Harry, better known as KC of KC and the Sunshine Band, and KC worked he worked in the shop, sweeping floors, stocking the shelves. And Henry, as we found out through KC, and everybody mentioned this, is Henry was very encouraging. He would let people do their thing. So, you know, KC had to stock the shelves and sweep the floors, but once he was done, he could go work on the piano over there, and he could try to put together tunes, and he could help Betty Wright and a lot of more book gigs. And then he hooked up with a guy named Rick Finch, and the two of them started writing songs. Rick was an engineer. So Henry let them go up into the studio at night, and that's when they started to write songs.
Make Miami Magic.
And make Miami Magic, indeed.
Wow, wow. That's something else. And the talent pool continued, as you mentioned, in our final 2 minutes of our opening segment with Mark Moorman, the producer and director of The Record Man, which will come out hopefully in March of 2015, the filmmaker of the documentary. More info at markmoorman.com and therecordmanmovie.com. Tell us a little bit about, in our final few moments of this segment, Betty Wright and Benny Lattimore, Timmy Thomas. I remember Timmy Thomas's national hit when I was a little kid.
Sure. Why Can't We Live Together is the name of the song. And he ended up going to, it was a huge international hit. Mm-hmm. And when we say hits, when mm-hmm. we talk about these hits, and there were a number of people who had one hits. I don't know, you wouldn't call them necessarily one hit wonders because mm-hmm. they had careers. But I mean, these hits were on a huge international scale, mm-hmm. like number one in over 60 countries around the world, those kind of hits. And so there were these, Henry had set up, you know, there was basically musicians, they get the best local musicians, and he was always looking for songwriters, people who could write a tune, because for him, as a record company owner, he knew that a big hit would be able to pay the bills for several months mm-hmm. and to cover the expenses. So he was always looking for songwriters and, again, was always willing to let people come in. You know, where else could you have a studio at your disposal to make your dreams come true? Mm-hmm. And that's what Henry offered people at TK.
Mm-hmm. We'll be speaking more in our next segment with filmmaker Mark Moorman. His latest coming out in March of 2015, we keep our fingers crossed, is called The Record Man. More with Mark Moorman on South Florida Arts Beat right after this.
People used to actually make pilgrimages. They wanted to know, where were these records made?
Where are you guys based, L.A. or New York? I got Miami, baby.
Everybody from Florida wanted to record for Henry Stone.
Henry was a hit man. You knew a hit when he had one.
Henry was the consummate, true record man.
Me and my band and Henry Stone, we changed music like the Beatles changed music, like Elvis Presley changed music.
Can you see me dancing? I'm dancing here.
Ed's dancing. It's not a pretty sight.
You're right, sir. Mark Moorman, my guest today, filmmaker. More info at markmoorman with two N's RecordMan.com and also the RecordManMovie.com, which will be released hopefully in March of 2015, about Henry Stone, TK Records, and the launch of the disco era with the music of KC and the Sunshine Band and their wonderful retinue of musicians, Betty Wright, the Cleanup Woman, Benny Lattimore, Timmy Thomas had a national hit. Tell me a little bit more about how you gathered together all the info and memorabilia that goes into making this documentary.
Well, that's a good question and certainly no easy task. I have to give a lot of credit to the producers on this, Mitch and Debbie Egber. Mitch really had a good handle on the story, and the two of them would go out and find the artists, get in contact with them, and they felt comfortable with the producers and agreed to come on board. And I got to say, throughout the whole process of making this film, it's been a lot of fun. The people have been really friendly, just the artists in general. And we are all working together. It's very collaborative that we wanted to get this story out there. We wanted to get this story told. It was a Miami story that a lot of people who live here don't even know about. Mm-hmm. They don't know about TK Records or Henry Stone, or I mean, they may have heard these songs, certainly, but not necessarily the people. So we wanted to put a spotlight on these artists and on the story and get it out there to the world. And that's really what we tried to do. Just like with the Tom Dowd film and the For Once in My Life film, we wanted to make something great that was going to be worthy of the story and get the story out there on an international international scale, and that's what we've done with this project.
As we say, this really launched the Miami sound, and which is a marvelous collection of different ethnicities. Tell me about the Bahamian influence. Tell me about the heavy R&B backbone to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely the Deep City. That was a R&B backbone straight out of Overtown, Liberty City, and that came into the studio. And then you had also the influence of Junkanoo. We actually went over to the Bahamas. There was a song called Funky Nassau Ray Munnings and his group. And, I mean, it definitely, we take it back to literally the slave ships coming over and the drums. He takes us to this place in the Bahamas where the ships would literally come in, and there was steps carved out of the cliff where the slaves would come up these steps and then be taken down to Bay Street and sold in the markets there. And he talked about the beginnings of Junkanoo, which was the day after Christmas. They were given the opportunity to come out and parade in the streets. And that's how that Junkanoo rhythm sound started. And so he made that song, Funky Nassau. And KC, Harry Wayne Casey, heard that over here. He heard Junkanoo. Mm. And he started KC and the Sunshine Junkanoo Band.
Ah.
And actually, we went and shot the Sunshine Junkanoo Band. They're still here in town. And we shot some clips with them. But KC started that Sunshine Junkanoo Band, had a song called Blow Your Whistle, and then ended up simplifying the whole thing. And he wrote that song. He wrote the song Rock Your Baby, that ended up, George McRae ended up doing. And so all those influences went into these songs, and it really was this cultural stew that became known as the Miami Sound.
It it really got worldwide recognition, as you say, in so many ways, and it had a nice longevity. I remember on the air in the 70s playing Bobby Caldwell's What You Won't Do for Love.
Sure.
Which was a kind of a sophisticated take on the Miami sound.
No doubt. And Bobby Caldwell was a white guy who sang black, as I would say.
Blue-eyed soul.
Indeed. And Henry was smart enough to market it that way, where basically they didn't put his picture on the album cover. And they didn't put KC's picture on the album cover at first either. And so a lot of these records broke on black radio first. And then they would show up at a show, and people would be a little surprised. But hey, they could sing it; they had the chops. And you know, that was one thing about Henry. He just whatever he had to do to get it done, to get that music out there. And you know, pretty amazing stories to hear, to be able to sit down with these guys and women, and to hear them tell their story of that one song that they became known for the rest of their careers, how it came about, and how Henry took that material and was able to get it out to radio stations and distribute it around the world.
Mm-hmm. So many sides to the Henry Stone story, of course. Tell us about his longevity. The disco era for him came to a crashing halt.
Indeed. As quickly as they went up and became the number one independent record company in the entire world, it came crashing down because of an event that happened at Comiskey Park in Chicago in 1979. Basically, there was a radio station host there did a disco demolition night between two games of a doubleheader, and they were going to blow up some disco records, and it got a little out of control, and basically the fans ran onto the field and were burning records, literally. I mean, we have footage. It's just, it's kind of hilarious and tragic at the same time, but literally fires in center field at Comiskey Park. You can't even believe it, man. It's like after this, they did not let people come onto a baseball field after a game. But unfortunately, disco basically died overnight. And the whole TK Records thing came crashing down. The banks wouldn't extend their loans anymore, and it all fell apart, and it's kind of an unbelievable story, the fact that they rose to such heights, and then it all came crashing down so quickly. And so TK Records ceased to exist. Henry was able to move on to his next phase of his career and got into freestyle music. And basically, you know, disco got a bad name at that point. And so a lot of these people, a lot of these artists are sort of forgotten. The tunes keep coming back. You'll see them in movies and in commercials. Yeah. I mean, Anita Ward's Ring My Bell.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are so many songs. Dance Across the Floor by Jimmy Bohorn. Mm-hmm. Songs you've heard and didn't know quite who did them. But they're there, and we wanted to document this and really tell this. This is really, I got to say, Ed, you know, it's really been similar to the Tom Dowd film. It's really been a community of filmmakers and musicians who've made this happen. Okay, you've got, and one thing that happened when we were making this film was I could not find any visual material of the old TK Studios. I couldn't find anything. I mean, some old photographs from newspapers, but it was pretty low quality. And a guy named Willie Clark of Deep City fame turned us on to a guy named Larry Warmoth. And Larry was a Hialeah policeman back in the 70s and a budding photographer. And he went into TK Studios and started taking promo pictures.
Wow.
And so we basically got in touch with him. He came over to my place, and we looked at this stuff, and I couldn't believe it, man. There they were, all the pictures we've been trying to find of when everyone was young and beautiful and making music, and it's all there inside the TK Studios and all the artists and promo shots. And so all that stuff is in the film, and it really brings it to life.
How exciting. How exciting and fortuitous that you found that photographer. And I hope that we'll be able to see more of these, of course, in your wonderful documentary, The Record Man. More info at therecordmanmovie.com. But anybody else you want to give credit to in our last 45 seconds?
Sure. I'd like to shout out to Aaron Fishbein, who's a music supervisor, and he did some. We have obviously all the songs that play in the film, but then we also scored the film as well, and he really did a great job. I brought in Omar Tavares, who's Pitbull's band leader and drummer, Brian Lynch, a trumpet player, teaches at UM.
Wow.
Really talented people, and also shout out to Bobby McIntyre, who's Studio 71 we used. So thanks to everybody.
So we're looking forward to seeing The Record Man. More info at therecordmanmovie.com. And congratulations to Mark Mormon. I can't wait for his next project. To get in touch with him, go to markmormon.com. Congratulations, Mark. And thanks so much for documenting the musical history of South Florida. Good luck, sir.
Thank you, Ed.
The WLRN mobile app is here. Search WLRN in the Apple App Store. You'll have unlimited access to WLRN radio, live broadcasts, news stories, features, and more. The WLRN mobile app is free and available now on your Apple device.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food, and our Palm Beach Arts calendar features Marilyn Bauer. Now, film critic Dan Hudak previews the Southern Circuit Film Tour and its featured presentation coming to Baca in Pompano Beach.
It's kind of a great idea, really. The Southern Circuit Film Tour travels the southeastern United States with independent films and filmmakers in tow, offering screenings and discussions of indie fare that doesn't shy away from the difficult issues of our time. Recent screenings have included topics as varied as a decades-long fight for clean drinking water in a small town and an eighth grader who shot a classmate to death. Since 1975, the tour has visited more than 100 communities across the southern United States, and it will stop in South Florida in Pompano Beach at Bailey Contemporary Arts on Saturday, February 21st, to show The New Black, a documentary about how the African-American community is dealing with the issue of gay rights. Here's a piece from the film's trailer.
Don't let people get you talking about gay rights. This is not about a gay right. There's a difference between civil rights and sacred rights.
Same-sex marriage, it's going to be put to vote here in Maryland.
No same-sex marriage in the state of Maryland.
Honk your horn if you believe.
Many people in the state's religious community, especially in African-American churches, oppose gay marriage and are vowing to continue their fight against it.
Thousands of Marylanders around the state want to see marriage defined and upheld between one man and one woman.
One of the biggest donors is pushing a strategy to drive a wedge between gays and African Americans.
All of a sudden, it was black versus gay.
Here to tell us more about The New Black and the Southern Circuit Film Tour is Teresa Hollingsworth, who's the Senior Director of Film and Traditional Arts for the company that administers the tour called South Arts. Teresa, thank you for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thanks so much. It's a great opportunity to chat with you.
Please tell us about the Southern Circuit Film Tour, what it is.
The Southern Circuit Tour of Independent Filmmakers has actually been around since 1975, and the program started in Columbia, South Carolina. It originally was a program of the South Carolina Arts Commission, and it is still, in fact, what it was envisioned to be, an actual tour of independent filmmakers. Unlike a film festival, which might run from, you know, a weekend up to a week, sometimes a little longer, like a festival like the Sundance Film Festival, Southern Circuit is different in that our films and the filmmakers who have created the work actually go on a tour. And in South Carolina, the South Carolina Arts Commission kept getting requests for screenings of films and for the filmmakers on the tour to present their work in states outside of the state of South Carolina. And because we're talking about state government, of course, that was not within their boundaries or their authority to take the circuit outside of their state. So there were a few screenings that went on at a few other states, but eventually the program came to South Arts, which is a nonprofit regional arts organization based in Atlanta, about 7 years ago. And because South Arts works with 9 southern states, we're able to present the independent films and the filmmakers that we tour on a much larger scale than the South Carolina Arts Commission was able to.
I'm loving your southern accent, by the way. How are the films and filmmakers chosen?
Filmmakers apply to participate through a program that we, an online program that we use called Without a Box. And we get hundreds of submissions from filmmakers all over the country. The films don't have to be about Southern culture, nor do the filmmakers have to be from the South. We actually encourage submissions from filmmakers from other parts of the United States. And at that point, South Arts staff will cull through all of the submissions. We have a jury composed of alum filmmakers that have toured on behalf of Southern Circuit, other independent filmmakers who are working in this country. We have independent film programmers from other festivals and from indie movie houses. We have a number of presenters who present independent film, perhaps in other venues like performing arts spaces or museums. And these invited jurors will then go through films. They will make their selections, and we end up with the top 40. And of those top 40 films, we eventually will arrive at 18 films and filmmakers who will be invited to participate in the Southern Circuit Tour. And the actual selections are made by representatives from our screening communities and the screening partners that we work with. We feel like those organizations and those individuals know better their audiences than a group of people from sitting in an office in Atlanta. So we want the film selection process to be a strong one. We want films that will speak to audiences throughout the region.
We're speaking with Teresa Hollingsworth, the Senior Director of Film and Traditional Arts for South Arts, which runs the Southern Circuit Film Tour. The screening that we have coming up is The New Black. It's playing at the Bailey Contemporary Arts in Pompano Beach. Teresa, tell us more about the actual selection process. So I take it from what you just said that there's a group, almost a pool of films where the venues can choose from, and then the venue will be able to choose the film that they believe best fits the audience. Is that accurate?
You're close.
Okay.
We actually work with a block booking system. We run three different circuit tours simultaneously, and we work with a lot of different communities. This year, the 14-15 season, we're actually working with 16 communities in 9 southern states, and we have 3 different circuits. Our partners in Pompano Beach are actually on what we call Circuit 1, and those films are often films that deal with sometimes controversial subject matter. They are films that are typically where filmmakers have taken a lot of chances with the content of the work that they will be presenting in their film, in the final cut of their film. And the reason that we involve the communities and the organizations that we're working with in film selection is because we want them to be able to have the opportunity to create new audiences and to perhaps present films that have not been seen in their community or films that present subject matter that would be of interest to particular communities.
So Bailey Contemporary Arts in Pompano has chosen The New Black as its film that's going to show on Saturday, February 21st, and Yoruba Ryken, the director, will be in town. Can you tell us more about the film and what to expect?
The film is extremely powerful. It deals with the segue between the historic African-American community and the role of the black church in African-American communities and LGBT rights. And right now we are dealing in this country with a lot of issues surrounding LGBT rights and the right for members of the same sex to marry one another legally. And we're also looking at civil rights and racial issues in this country still today. So the film brings all of these issues together. And one of the wonderful things we think about Southern Circuit is because the filmmakers travel with the film and they are involved in a Q&A session after each of the screenings, we hope that this is a time for the filmmaker and audience members to actually have a dialogue, not only about the art of filmmaking, but about the subject matter presented in the film.
So this one's hitting the trifecta of racial tension, gay rights, and civil rights. Does it ever happen that it gets testy or confrontational in those post-screening Q&As? Does it ever get kind of awkward?
We've been very fortunate that our Q&A sessions and discussions have been very civil. Oftentimes, people can agree not to agree, but I think it's very important for individuals and organizations within communities to have the opportunity to listen to one another. And we encourage listening as much as we do discussion. This is a time for, obviously, for people to share their opinions, to share their experiences, to share their hopes. But we also see it as a great opportunity for maybe some people to gather in a room who have never had the opportunity to sit together, to view a film, for that to be framed, to have this discussion.
Yeah, it sounds like a fascinating experience to view a film with this type of subject matter and then converse about it with the filmmaker, get a feeling for the filmmaker's intentions, for the filmmaker to get a reflection from the audience. It sounds like quite a fascinating experience. Teresa, best of luck to you. This sounds like a wonderful opportunity for South Florida film lovers.
Thank you so much. We hope the audience in South Florida will come out to support the film. And we have some other films that we'll be screening also in March and April. And you can get more information about those films on the South Arts website at southarts.org.
Fantastic. Best of luck.
Thank you.
The New Black is screening as part of the Southern Circuit Film Tour on Saturday, February 21st at 7:30 p.m. at Bailey Contemporary Arts, 41 Northeast 1st Street in Pompano Beach. For more information, go to bacapompano.org and click on events, or go to southarts.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at punchdrunkmovies.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the fram-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is bacon. One of the most alluring aromas I've known in my life is the smell of bacon frying in a skillet. I think I could get a near unanimous agreement on that. Even the vegetarians have bacon-scented tofu, so they can't complain altogether on this. If you take in the pleasure of a morning walk on a Sunday, in any of the hundreds of thousands of hamlets and neighborhoods all over the world, you may be caught in this porcine perfume. It stirs emotions of such a primal nature, it is impossible not to, well, wallow in it. Bacon is the salted and or smoked meat taken from the sides and back of pig. Only about one-third of a pig is butchered and sold fresh. The rest is turned into processed meats, such as bacon. Although it is possible to cure any cut of pork, the process is most frequently applied to the fatty belly, which produces bacon and salt pork, and to the hind legs, which produce hams. Our forebears came up with these methods in that the pig was so prodigal, you couldn't possibly eat it all fresh. In the times that predate refrigeration and freezing, curing became a way to hold on to the meat for meals after the fresh meat was consumed. We have not given up the love of smoked and cured meats now that we don't actually need to do it. I think it's part of God's plan. Bacon is rarely consumed by itself. It is too much of a good thing, in a sense. Its fatty, smoky meatiness calls for some bland richness like potatoes, pancakes, and eggs, some sweetness like orange juice, applesauce or maple syrup, and even some bitterness like black coffee. Hey, sounds like breakfast is ready. Recently, I was the guest chef and performer for a cooking class at the fabulous Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables. We took part in many events there over a score of years with my friends who were active in the American Institute of Wine and Food back then. So teaching there was kind of like reminiscing for us. We started up on a high stage showing folks how we make shrimp ceviche. If you have a detective-like mind, you might be asking about now, where could bacon possibly intrude itself on ceviche? And I'm with you. But as part of the cooking contest for the executives who had flown in from all over the country and were partaking in this culinary contest was a garnish table. What that meant is that each team could select from a variety of edibles there to try and win the contest. Cooked rashers of bacon joined bowls of olives, slices of fruit, farm market vegetables, etc. At one point, I could see one of the teams contemplating putting bacon in their ceviche. They looked to me for advice. I considered, but the thought of cold bacon wasn't cutting it. They seemed forlorn. Then I raised up this idea. Well, you could use the bacon like a spoon of sorts, you know, stir the ceviche mixture to infuse it with a smoky profile. They jumped on that idea, and you could see their confidence soar. With bacon going even in cookies these days, it didn't seem totally out to lunch. And with bacon as a stirrer, I began to consider that this might be the most literal greasy spoon ever. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Baguettes. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Ms. Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Governmental Affairs for the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. Marilyn, how's Palm Beach County doing?
It's doing great. You know, we have beautiful weather and we have things going on every single day. And, you know, it's more than one thing a day. It's like three or four or five.
I bet.
So we are in season.
All right. Let's hear about it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think your listeners will be really interested in hearing about is that every year our Palm Beach Photographic Society does this event called Photo Fusion. And it brings in photographers and people who love photography from all over the world. And there's more than 100 seminars and workshops and lectures and panel discussions. It's a five-day event. And if you're an amateur photographer and want to learn more, if you're a pro and you want to somehow finesse your skills, this is the place to go. And this year, there's going to be two community events. And the first one is on the 22nd from 6 to 8. And it's an opening reception for an amazing show called Women of Vision, National Geographic Photographers on Assignment. And what the show is, it highlights the work of 11 influential journalists. And these are the big, bold names in photographing cultures and far-flung destinations and social issues and things of that nature. It's free, open to the public. You're going to see great photography, and the great photography is going to see you because it's great people watching. And then for the first time, they're doing something called Photo Vision, and it's down at the waterfront on the Great Lawn. And what they're doing is they have seven photographers who are going to show short films. And the films will be broadcast outdoors. The seven photographers will be there, and after the showing of each one of the short films, they're going to have panel discussion. Again, free for everybody. A great event outside on that great lawn, beautiful weather. It's what this area is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Another really interesting event is coming up at the Murakami Museum in Delray Beach. And this is going to be on December 17th. It's all about the kimono. And the kimono is really, really interesting because it comes from the 17th century in Japan. And the first kimonos were very, very simple. And then they became more and more elaborate with the rise of the middle class. And so this certain class in Japan, you know, it was always sort of like samurais were the ones that would have the most elaborate kimonos. And then as the merchant class increased in affluence, they couldn't spend their money the same way the samurais could, but they could buy more and more expensive clothes. So the kimonos became very, very elaborate with embroidery and pearls and so on and so forth. And so on January 17th, you can go to the Murakami Museum and find out how to properly wear a formal kimono and learn about the versatility of what is iconic garment. And there's no reservations required. It's $5 with the admission to the museum. While you're there, you can stroll the gardens, and I highly recommend the sesame noodles in the restaurant.
Beautiful.
It's very interesting that they always say that art reflects life, and so now up here in Palm Beach County, the ban on same-sex marriages has been repealed, and we have been having a flurry of weddings, and at the same time, the Wick Theater is presenting Bacchaja Fall. Of course, you know that this is a very well-beloved musical that came from a 1973 French farce and then was made into a movie that for 10 years was the top foreign film in the U.S. And then there was the remake called Birdcage, the Mike Nichols remake with Robin Williams in it. And so this production at the Wick Theater stars Leroy Reams and Walter Charles, both of whom appeared in the show on Broadway. So I would call the theater and get a ticket before February 15th. The library here in West Palm Beach, Mandel Public Library, has all kinds of programming, and they have something really, really interesting. They're doing a special song and story performance by the award-winning Barbara Cecil and Keith Torgan of the Green Golly Project. And the name of this program is Now We Can Sing. And it's a musical event that's centered on music that was banned to Jewish musicians by the Nazis in the 1930s. And so Barbara Cecil is the flautist, singer, songwriter, really, really interesting. There's some cabaret songs, there's Bach, there's Copland, Gershwin, and it's on January 25th from 2 to 3 p.m. The Delray Beach Center for the Arts has got their free Friday concerts at the Pavilion in full swing, and on January 16th they'll have Bushwood, which is a reggae rock kind of group. January 23rd, Gallows Tribute to Santana, and January 30th, the B Street Band, which is the Bruce Springsteen tribute band. Shakespeare, for the first time, outdoors in Palm Beach Gardens at the Veterans Plaza Outdoor Theater from 7 to 9 o'clock, you can see A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's a fast-paced production by Trent Stevens, who kind of consolidates the work. It's free. The people that live in the Ballin Isles community, they have a charitable foundation. They raise the money to put this on for the community. It's January 16th and 17th. It's bound to be great.
Marilyn, so much more going on in Palm Beach County, but where can we find out more info about these and other events?
Just visit palmbeachculture.com.
Great weekend to you. Thank you so much, Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Governmental Affairs.
Thank you.
And if I may, let me mention movie nights at the New World Soundscape continue every Wednesday, coming up Wednesday, January 21st, from 1963, Bye Bye Birdie. Wednesday, January 28th, Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan, and coming up, Ace Ventura, The Wiz, Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Miami Rhapsody, Wednesday, in February. So that's located at the New World Center for the Arts, 517th Street on Miami Beach. That's in the park on the east side of that building. The Boys and Girls Club of Miami is planning a reunion for its alumni in early 2015. They'd like you to be there. If you're interested, call Arthur Hernandez at 305-446-9910, extension 13. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer, Andy Wagner, our technical director. We'd also like to thank our contributors, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Marilyn Bauer. Please call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend. And please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye and joy.